So it's a great pleasure to have Hlir Kristjansson today to as our speaker for the Quantum Foundation seminar. And Hlir will talk about resource theories of quantum superpositions of causal order. Right? I'm not sure.
Yeah, resource theories of communication, yeah.
Of communication. Okay.
Those with indefinite causal order.
Okay, great. Then the stage is yours.
Okay, so thank you very much for coming to my talk. So it's really a pleasure and an honor to be able to talk to you today at the Perimeter Institute. So yes, as Flaminia said, I'm going to talk about a recent work of ours on the resource theories of communication. But since some of you actually told me that you're interested in another paper that's come out even more recently about called rooted quantum circuits, so I want to spend some time at the end just talking a little bit about that paper, and sort of how they relate. Now, unfortunately, I had an infection in my throat recently, so I kind of lost my ability to talk. So I have to be very careful about talking and can't really talk for 40 minutes. So what I've done is I've recorded most of my talk, and I'm going to play that back to you now. And in about 10 minutes intervals, I'll stop the recording, and then you can ask questions. And make it more like a live discussion. And I'm going to just play the recording through my screen, so please feel free to interrupt at any moment and ask questions. And I'll be presenting using Prezi video, so my slides will appear on my screen, both in the video and in live format. So you can just, there'll not be any numbers, but you can kind of remember what the pictures are if you have questions about particular things. So let me see if I can, hopefully it'll work this time. So can you see my screen now?
Yes.
Good. So I will get started, and at a certain point I will stop, and then you can, I'll ask if you can let me know if you've got any questions. So now you can see myself in the past. Hello, and welcome to my talk on resource theories of communication. I'm Hlir Kristjansson, and this is joint work with my PhD supervisor, Giulio Chiribella, as well as Sina Salek, Daniel Ibler, and Matthew Wilson. So this talk is going to be mostly based on our recent paper in the New Journal of Physics. But since we have some more time, I would also like to go into some detail of the general framework of the research program that I've been working on for my PhD, along with some collaborators in Oxford and Hong Kong, which is the so-called second quantized Shannon theory. And then I will go into this new resource theoretic framework, which addresses some of the issues in the second quantized Shannon theory. Then I will move to discuss some applications of this new resource theoretic framework to interesting communication scenarios. And then finally, at the end, I also want to go into a short taster of our most recent work, which is called Rooted Quantum Circuits. And this is a work which builds on some of the ideas in the resource theoretic paper, but approaches them from a slightly different angle. So I just want to give a short taster of what we've been doing there. So you can, if you're interested, you can read and find out more. So let's start with Shannon theory. So Shannon theory really is the kind of generic theory of communication. So classical Shannon theory is the theory of communication where the information carriers are classical, for example, the coin I've drawn here, which then travels in a well-defined trajectory through some classical communication channel. So for example, from Alice to Bob. Now, quantum Shannon theory is the generalization of Shannon theory to the quantum domain, where the information carriers are allowed to be quantum states, for example, photons. So the information can now be encoded in a quantum state, so we can send quantum information, and the transmission lines are able to carry this quantum information. However, there is still a sense in which the transition from classical to quantum is incomplete. Because in both of these cases we've discussed so far, the configuration of the transmission lines is still classical. However, we know, for example, from the double slit experiment, that a quantum particle can propagate in a superposition of two alternative trajectories. So this really calls for a further generalization of Shannon theory, or a second level of quantization of Shannon theory, where the configuration of the transmission lines themselves can also be in a quantum superposition. So what do I mean by that? Well, let's consider the kind of simplest example of this. So we could have simply something really similar to the double slit experiment, where we have a superposition of trajectories. So a single particle, which has an internal degree of freedom, for example, the polarization of a photon or spin of an electron, travels in a superposition of trajectories, which is the trajectory is the path degree of freedom of the photon, for example, the external degree of freedom. So it travels in a superposition of trajectories through two separate communication channels. So either it travels through A or it travels through B, depending on the state of this path degree of freedom. So this kind of idea was proposed in several papers, which you can see here, and most recently in the context of communication, in the papers by Alistair Abbott and co-workers and Giulio Chirubella and myself. Now, more exotically, you could also consider a superposition of causal orders of communication channels. So in this case, you have two channels A and B, and you are committed to using both of them. But you have not decided which order to use them. So I mean, classically, you could connect, say, you could use a channel A and then followed by channel B, or you could send the particle through the channel B first and then through the channel A. But quantum theory allows this third possibility, where we have really a quantum superposition of the two possible orderings. So it's important to note here that this is really a superposition is really of the kind of order degree of freedom, because in both cases we are using both channels. So it's different from the previous superposition of trajectories, where we use one channel or the other. Here we are committed to using both, and it is the order of the channels that is in a quantum superposition. Now, this protocol, where we have two channels used in a superposition of orders, is called a quantum switch, and has been really the subject of immense discussion in the last couple of years, and most recently, indeed, in the context of communication. Now, these are probably the two most canonical examples of this kind of second quantized Shannon theory, but there are many more examples than one could come up with. So, for example, in a recent paper by myself and co-workers, we also considered the possibility of a superposition of times. So we send a quantum particle at a superposition of two alternative times through a quantum channel which has some correlations in time. And in a slightly different direction, but also related, is the recent protocol by Del Santo and Dakic, which considers the superposition of the direction of communication. So now really it's the direction of communication which is being quantized. So you have Alice and Bob, and you have only got a single particle, but this single particle travels from the superposition of going from Alice to Bob and from Bob to Alice. So we've got these kind of four different examples of this second quantized theory, where the configuration of the transmission lines is in a quantum superposition. We've got superposition of trajectories, superposition of orders, times, and of the direction of communication. And so we'll ask, so what is the point of this stuff, naturally? Well, these different paradigms have all been shown to yield some sort of communication advantages. So the superposition of causal orders has been shown to yield advantages over standard quantum Shannon theory, in the sense that if you take two noisy quantum channels, combining them in the superposition of orders can yield a quantum channel that is less noisy overall. And similarly, the superposition of trajectories and of times has also been shown to yield similar communication advantages in these papers that you see here over standard quantum channel theory. So using two communication channels that are noisy in standard quantum channel theory can be combined in a superposition to yield a less noisy channel overall. Now, however, as we can see, these are kind of slightly different paradigms that we've considered, all within the umbrella of a second quantized Shannon theory, which naturally has led to a debate on the exact nature and relation of these different advantages. Where some authors have argued or have questioned the extent to which indefinite causal order per se, for example, leads to the communication advantages associated with the quantum switch, as opposed to the kind of generic element of coherent control of this external degree of freedom, which is present in all of the different schemes. So I won't go into the details of this debate here, but it suffices to say that this debate has really led to two very fundamental questions. So first of all, the first question that really needs to be answered is, how should potential advantages in quantum Shannon theory, or in extensions of quantum Shannon theory, be quantified and compared? And secondly, what is the origin of these purported advantages? Well, in this work, we propose an answer to the former question, and we set the scene for future work on the latter. We do this by formulating a resource theory of communication, which quantifies the differences between the different forms of coherent control, of orders, of paths, of times, etc., and also provides a general framework to formally define new paradigms of communication, including those not necessarily related to coherent control, as we've discussed here above. So any questions so far?
I have a quick question. In the example where you talked about the superposition of different times of transmission, you said where the channel was correlated across time, but can you clarify what you mean by that?
Let me just find the slide. So the idea is that it's a channel, it's like a quantum comb, so a channel with memory. So let's say if I have a concrete example would be a Pauli channel, like a depolarizing channel. So I put in my state and then either it's acted on by the identity X, Y, or Z. And then the correlation could be that if I put like a bipartite state across two separate times, the first time it acts on X, then it always acts again like X the second time. Or it could be a more complicated correlation, like every time I put in X, I get sigma Y the next time. And whenever I put in sigma y, I get sigma x the next time. So it's just a kind of, it's basically like, in our cases, we consider classical correlations in time. So just a quantum comb with classical correlations. But you could have even more complicated correlations if you are interested in that, I guess. Sorry, you're muted.
Thanks. So in your picture, I kind of don't see it. Maybe I'm supposed to interpret the two layers of your diagram as early and late. Like I have the idea that, like, suppose I fit in something that wasn't in a superposition of different times, then it would be encountering kind of like an early channel and a late channel. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. So exactly. So it's like, physically, like imagine you have a transmission line, like if I'm here in Oxford and you're at PI and I want to send you something, there's like some channel and I just like imagine that the channel just itself has correlation. So if I just send one particle, I would send the particle undergo some noise and send another particle the later time and it undergoes some noise which is correlated with the noise that happened the first time. So that's kind of the standard paradigm of correlated channels. And what we've done here is we, instead of sending one particle at time t1 and another one at time t2, we send a kind of bipartite state at the superposition of those two times. And then you get sort of additional advantages on top of the advantages that you would get from sending two particles at two times when you know the correlations.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the question. Okay. And I hope that screen sharing was all okay. Okay, great. So that's, try this again. So what is a resource theory? Well, a resource theory is a mathematical framework that captures kind of any physical scenarios where we have resources which are scarce, and we have some free transformations that we can always apply to those resources. For example, in cooking, we can have some carrots and potatoes that come in a limited quantity, and then we have, you know, the process of boiling them to make stew. So stew would be kind of the thing that comes out of the free transformation of the boiling. Now, in simple mathematical terms, a resource theory consists of objects, which represent the resources, and operations on those objects, which correspond to the free transformations. Now, importantly, the set of operations on the objects must be closed under parallel and sequential composition. In more formal mathematical terms, a resource theory is a symmetric monodal category with objects corresponding to resources and morphisms corresponding to the free transformations. And in that case, the condition of being closed under composition comes naturally. But here, let's just start with a very simple example of a resource theory. So let's take the resource theory of 19th century Iceland, where we have got three objects: sheep, food, and woolen sweaters. Oh, and snow as well. So four objects, actually. And we've got two different free transformations. So we've got the farmer who takes a sheep and converts it into food, and we've got the grandma who takes the sheep and converts it into a woolen sweater. Now, there is no way of converting food to woolen sweaters, which means that there is no free transformation from food into woolen sweaters. There's no arrow there in this diagram, and snow cannot be converted into anything else. Nothing can be converted to snow. So we can kind of see this from this diagram that some objects can be converted into others, but not everything can be converted into everything else. And what can be converted into each other is really captured by these free transformations, or the operations on the resources. So in our case, the resource theory we're interested in is a resource theory of communication, in which case the resources are transmission lines, or mathematically quantum channels, that is, completely positive trace-preserving maps. Now, the possible transformations of quantum channels are, by definition, the objects called quantum supermaps. So these are transformations of quantum channels that map quantum channels to quantum channels in a well-defined way. Now, to specify our resource theory, we need to choose which transformations we want to be allowed in the resource theory. So this is not all mathematically valid supermaps, but has some additional physical meaning. So we will pick some restricted choice of supermaps M3, which describe how we are allowed to use communication channels that we already have. So that we can think of the communication channels as being some resources that are scarce, and we want to kind of make a theory that captures how these communication channels that are given to us can be used in communication settings. So let's start by formulating standard quantum channel theory in this resource theoretic framework. So we define the resources of standard quantum channel theory as coming in two different types. So the first one is what we call the unplaced quantum channels. So these are quantum channels from some input space to some output space. So x1 to y1, for example, which just corresponds to some Hilbert space of a given dimension. These are just quantum channels from some input to some output space. So the only thing that really is specified by the input and output spaces is their dimension. But there is no interpretation of these input and output systems being localized anywhere in space-time or corresponding to any communicating parties. Whereas the second type of objects we have are what we call place channels. So these are also quantum channels, so completely positive trace-preserving maps from some input system to an output system. But in this case, in addition to the dimension of the Hilbert space corresponding to the input and output systems, we also associate a particular agent who is localized at a particular point in space-time. So for example, for the channel we have here, C1, C1 is a place channel from system A to system R, where system A corresponds not only to some Hilbert space, but also to the agent Alice, and R corresponds to the agent Ray. And both of these agents are located at some particular point in space-time. So this brings us to the free transformations. So we're going to take two basic free transformations in our resource theory. The first one is what we call the basic placement supermap. So this takes an unplaced quantum channel and places it into spacetime. So it places it somewhere into kind of a real spacetime between two communicating parties. So for example, I could take the unplaced channel N from X to Y and I place it between Alice and Bob. Mathematically, what we do is we take the isomorphism between the unplaced systems X and Y and the placed systems A and B respectively. So these are just isomorphisms between systems of the same dimension of the Hilbert space, but we additionally add in this interpretation of a space-time location. And physically, these basic placement supermaps are to be interpreted as being performed by some communication provider. So a kind of company that lays down a communication framework or communication networks really takes these devices that they have in the warehouse and puts them there between the communicating parties. Now, before moving on to the second type of free transformations, let's just pause for a minute and see what we can do with the one we already have. So with the basic placement supermap, we can construct also parallel placements. So that's just taking two of the same kind of things, two basic placement supermaps from Alice and Bob, each one taking the tensor product of the two, so each one acts on a different quantum unplaced quantum channel and places it between both of them, between Alice and Bob, resulting in a new placed quantum channel. Now, slightly more elaborately, we also have a sequential placement, which takes two unplaced quantum channels and places them now. In sequence, so between three communicating parties. So the first one is placed between Alice and Ray, and the second one between Ray and Bob. And mathematically, again, we have a tensor product of the two. But importantly, the tensor product is now not between two identical basic placement supermaps, but the first one is a basic placement supermap from Alice to Ray, and the second one, a basic placement supermap from Ray to Bob. So what this does is it takes maps two unplaced quantum channels into a single placed quantum channel, which is of the form of a quantum comb. So a quantum comb is this kind of a bipartite quantum channel with a particular inbuilt causal structure. So you can see here that Alice happens before Ray, before Bob. Now, the second free transformation that we are going to allow in standard quantum channel theory is what we call the party supermap. So the party supermap is really something that can be interpreted as being performed by the communicating parties. So this party supermap takes some placed quantum channel and gives you another placed quantum channel that is really ready to be used for communication. So the party supermap really just corresponds to local operations performed by each of the communicating parties. So Alice can perform some encoding, for example, in this picture here, an encoding operation. Ray, the intermediate party, can perform some repeater operation between the two channels that she has access to, and finally Bob can perform some encoding. So these are really just local operations, and that's what we choose to be the free transformation of the party supermaps. Now note that this is of course within the context of standard quantum Shannon theory, which we take to mean kind of communication from a sender to a receiver, potentially with some intermediate parties. But of course, if we were considering some more elaborate communication scenarios, for example, quantum communication with the assistance of free classical communication, then we could have more elaborate types of party supermaps, for example, with a kind of free classical transmission line between Alice and Bob. But for now, we're going to stick to standard quantum Shannon theory. So to recap standard quantum Shannon theory, we've got two types of objects, the unplaced quantum channels and the placed quantum channels. And we've got two types of free transformations, the placement supermaps from unplaced to placed channels, and the party supermaps, which act on placed channels. And this motivates a general definition of resource theories of communication. So, a resource theory of communication is specified by a set of three supermaps M3, containing A, placement supermaps, and B, party supermaps. And really, the particular choice of these two types of supermaps defines the interesting properties of the resource theory in question. Okay, any more questions at this point or comments?
Yeah, maybe I have a question.
Hi.
Hi. In the paper, I think you have also this notion of pre-placement supermap.
Yes. Oh, wow. Thank you very much for reading the paper in this much detail. That only appeared in the final version. So yes, thank you for pointing that out. So yes. So, okay. In principle, you can have indeed a third type of operation. So let me just find where is that slide? So yeah. So So before the placement of the channels, you can imagine some kind of pre-processing task that you do to the unplaced channels. But usually in standard quantum channel theory, we assume that the only type of pre-placement operation that is allowed is just the identity operation, i.e. you take some unplaced channels and you keep them there, or the discarding or destroying operation, where you take some of your channels in the warehouse and you say, okay, this one's a bit broken, so I'm just gonna throw it in the bin and not use it. So that's the only ones we allow. And the reason is that we kind of interpret, we don't really want to construct a theory where you start combining loads of unplaced channels together yet. I mean, in principle, this could be done, but I think the mathematical construction of defining a theory where you put unplaced channels already in sequence or in parallel is quite complicated. So we haven't considered that yet. And I think physically, really, it makes more sense to imagine that also that you take first the channels that you have and they're just there, and then you place them. And then once you place them, they have an interpretation of being actually in sequence or parallel. Whereas if you want to pre-place operations already, like it doesn't, like since they are already kind of, they just exist kind of in a warehouse abstract sense, it's not so meaningful to, I think, to discuss, at least not simply to discuss how they can be kind of operated on.
A comment. It seems like I don't know if I agree that in regular Shannon theory, these pre-placements are trivial. I mean, they're not usually considered, I guess, but having them would not change really the theory, right? Because if you take some black box and you apply arbitrary operation before and after, it can only decrease the capacity. So it's not like, I don't know. It's not clear whether it's there or not in the theory.
So yeah, you're right. So I think in let's say if we think in like kind of ordinary space time and ordinary everything, then maybe it doesn't really, then it's maybe not so important to make this distinction clear. But I think in that case maybe it doesn't really matter if I take two things and I put them in sequence and then I place them somewhere, or if I first place them and then I put the placed stuff in sequence, maybe it doesn't matter too much. But I think if we want to do it formally in this way to separate the two things, this is like a formalization I think makes more sense. Whereas you are right that in practice, like in the standard quantum channel theory, it maybe was not that important which way around you did things.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Rob?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I'm understanding correctly. Is it the case that any given channel is considered non-free? So like, I'm trying to understand the sense in which this subsumes usual Shannon theory. Mm-hmm. Having the ability to send one bit or one qubit from Alice to Bob is considered a resource. It's not free.
Exactly.
But I guess the channel, which would just, you know, throw away Alice's qubit and prepare something on Bob's side. So there's no communication there. That would that be subsumed in the free stuff?
So that's a very good question. So that is actually sort of maybe a fundamental kind of interesting thing that occurs in the theory that you can see. If you've seen the communication advantages of the quantum switch or the superpositional channels, you will see that you can take what it looks like. You can take two quantum channels that have zero capacity. And as you said, Alice's input goes in the bin and Bob gets a random stuff. And if you take two of them and put them into the quantum switch, for example, it appears that you can get some communication. So in that case, we don't unplace quantum channels that have zero capacity. We don't want zero capacity unplaced quantum channels to necessarily be free, because there exist these types of supermaps in the extended quantum channel theory that do enable the possibility of communication with unplaced channels with zero capacity in standard quantum channel theory. But on the other hand, placed quantum channels with zero capacity, so if they're already placed, then they already are subsumed into like a structure that we understand, like structure of standard quantum channel theory, almost. And then clearly they are useless because they have already been placed and you can't do anything with them. But before placing them, we don't want to make the assumption yet that, say, a depolarizing channel is useless, because maybe there exist operations in some extended theories that might be able to activate them.
Okay, let me ask another question. I didn't quite understand that, but is there any limit to the scope of the placement supermaps that are considered to be free, or is it all placement supermaps? So in particular, it wasn't clear to me whether sort of placing two channels in a coherent superposition of one order or another, is that just one of the placement supermaps and therefore part of the free set, or is there kind of a division among placement supermaps?
Right, so basically there are we define kind of different resource theories. So the resource theory that I have just described is the resource theory of standard quantum channel theory. So this one only includes actual placing, and placing can be composed in parallel sequence, and it allows you to do local operations by the communicating parties. But standard quantum channel theory does not include any kind of coherent control, either of channels or of orders. So that the switch superposition is not the free supermap in this theory. But next I will describe the extensions of quantum channel theory, so different extensions will have different extended supermaps. So the quantum channel theory with the assistance of the quantum switch has the quantum switch as an additional supermap, for example. But that one does not have, let's say, coherent control. So that's a different supermap. So depending on which supermaps you choose, you get a different resource theory.
So within this resource theory, there would then be no problem allowing these non-communicating channels for free, the one that trace and re-prepare, because there's no option of putting it into a switch or anything. So would it be all right here in this context?
Yes, I think you're right, indeed, yeah.
Okay,
So what we have not yet done in this paper is characterize all the free channels. We just kind of defined free operations. But as you said, the characterization of the free channels will be something that needs to be done post deciding on the free operations. Okay, so I will continue unless there are any more questions. Okay. Now, in principle, any specification of placement supermaps and party supermaps defines some resource theory of communication. But this resource theory of communication need not be a meaningful one. For example, let's consider this placement supermap, which takes two unplaced quantum channels, N1 and N2, and simply places them in the bin, and then instead places a perfectly shiny optical fiber between Alice and Bob, which allows them to communicate perfectly. Well, in this case, this placement supermap renders the initial communication resources we started with, the communication channels N1 and N2, completely useless. So in a sense, any communication theory that includes this as a placement supermap is really a trivial theory, because it doesn't matter how noisy your initial channels are, you can always generate communication for free. So we don't want these kind of supermaps in our theory, which leads us to a minimal requirement, which we call the no side channel generation, where we forbid the generation of any channels which allow you to communicate from Alice to Bob independently of the initial communication channels that you start with. So more formally, we say that the set of free supermaps must not contain any side channel generating operations. Now, this is probably going to be one of the most technical parts of this talk, so please bear with me. But the definition of side channel generating operations is quite involved. Now, let's start with the definition of a supermap in the kind of in the graphical picture that I'm using here. So a supermap is a map from quantum channels to quantum channels. And we draw it in this way, like this blue object here, with some teeth in the middle, and you can slot in the quantum channels, the things that I've drawn in red. And then, again, you end up with something of the form of a quantum channel with some input wires at the bottom and output wires at the top. So we say that the supermap S generates side channels if there exists some free supermap S prime, such that for all choices of unplaced channels N1, N2, to NK, the action of S prime on S on the unplaced channels is equal to some fixed place channel with non-zero capacity. So this is a bit of a mouthful, but essentially what it's saying is that no matter what unplaced channels we started with, so no matter how noisy the unplaced channels we started with were, we can always pick some, well, we can all, there always exists the same S prime. So for example, some encoding or decoding operation that can be performed by the agents, such that the unplaced channels are transformed into a place channel that can allow you to communicate. So this is really captures the idea of the thing that we don't want, namely the possibility of communication that is independent of the initial communication resources. So now that we have established our framework and our minimal condition, let's apply this to some of the extensions of standard quantum channel theory that have been studied in the recent literature.
Could I interrupt the talk to ask a question?
So first, let's start with this example here.
Almost 2 years ago.
Oops, I have to stop the...
Yeah.
Good?
So I didn't quite follow this definition. My confusion, I think, is that you sort of didn't want to allow for free any supermap that could be channel generating.
Yeah.
But in this definition, you have a quantifier over free supermaps. I don't know, just it felt a little bit circular. Like these free supermaps, like what defines freeness in this definition?
Right, yes. So yeah, thanks for that comment. Can you see now still like the live version of the slide?
In front of you is the slide that you were talking about. So I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, good. So this is like the reason that it's formulated in this way is because we wanted to be completely general in terms of the distinction between placement supermaps and party supermaps. But I think it's better to illustrate this example if we kind of distinguish between the two. So if we imagine now that the blue stuff is really the, like if I start with kind of, let's say I already have a theory with some supermaps that are given. Like we always have, let's say the basic placement supermap, we always allow kind of the encoding and decoding operations. And then I want to, so that those are like the supermaps that I already have. And in particular, the party supermaps are kind of the supermaps I already have, and those are ones that are in pink. And then I ask like, then like somebody comes to me and says like, oh, here's another supermap. in blue, and kind of holds it out and say, can I put this one into your theory? And then I have to check, well, if given the supermaps that are already in the theory, if this supermap acting on any unplaced channels is such that I can always put my pink channel on top, pink supermap on top. So the pink supermap, you can just imagine that it's encoding and decoding, like for a simple case. So imagine that whenever I, for any unplaced channels that I have, this blue supermap will allow me to get a placed channel, which Alice and Bob can encode and decode with the same encoding and decoding operation independently of the original channels, such that they can communicate. That's what we don't want to happen. Okay. So the definition, as you said, it might be a bit confusing written in this form. So actually in the paper, it is written more formally, so very formally with more stuff. What I just said was like a simple version, and maybe the drawing in the middle was not so easy to follow because I tried to make it sort of both clear, but also including the details. Does that answer the question?
I think so. Let me see if I understand that. Given the motivating example that you presented on the earlier slide, you could have presented this definition with the pink supermap having no spine so that it was clearly exactly. Just, and then it would have been clear. But let me see if I understand why you want the extra generality. Like if in a certain context you wanted a notion of sort of an operation that doesn't generate any quantum channels, but classical channels are allowed for free, then the pink thing could be something whose spine had a classical channel, and then it would be used to evaluate whether the blue, you know, generates a quantum channel or not. So something
exactly,
like that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Exactly, and then, I mean, there would also be like, in the full generality, there could be like pre-placement channels. They would also have to satisfy, you know, so that there's some more complications that you can read about. But in general, this is really the kind of the basics. So yeah, thanks for the question. So I'll continue now, unless there are any more questions.
Yeah, maybe I'll ask one question as well.
Yeah.
So like the definition, you can do the, how do you call it, contrapositive of it, no? And you get that I think that's the way you use it in the paper anyway, no?
Yes.
So that basically, if you can put in some channels inside the thing such that it ends up, the resulting channel has zero capacity, then it's non-side channel generating.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
But isn't it, I am not arguing necessarily with the definition, but wouldn't it be weird if you had a thing that had just like for two specific channels, it has zero capacity, but everything else, it has, it allows communication. Even if you put like discard, re-prepare channels in it, sometimes it would allow for communication. You would still call it no side channel generating.
Yeah, yes. So I think you raised an important point here. So the definition that we have defined here is like a very, very, it's a very weak definition. So it doesn't capture everything that you might want to be like, that you would say bad, like, you know, you see something and it's like, okay, this is cheating. It doesn't capture everything, but it's really intended as a kind of minimal condition. But what is crucial here is that the idea that not only can we generate some communication, but we generate like communication that is completely independent of the red channels. So you can imagine a situation that is kind of says is okay, given this side channel generating operation, where, you know, depending on which red channels you pick, you would pick a different pink channel. But in this definition, we kind of want the communication to not to be independent of the initial resources. So that
here the channel is the same for all input channels.
Yes, exactly. So the idea is that there must exist a free supermap. Like the pink one has to be global over all possible choices of the red channels. So the pink supermap, pink kind of encoding and decoding supermap, has to be global.
Yeah, I can't really see now. Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the question. I mean, yeah, actually, like, just to say, like, when we were formulating this, there are, like, you know, you can think of like a million different ways of defining side channels. And so I think there is definitely a trade-off between how strong and how weak you want your definition to be. So we kind of settled on this one at the end, but definitely it's only a minimal condition. Okay, I will share screen again.
Now that we have established our framework and our minimal condition, let's apply this to some of the extensions of standard quantum channel theory that have been studied in the recent literature. So first, let's start with this example here, which was proposed 2 years ago, as a kind of challenge to the quantum switch. So the idea here is that, let's say, so the quantum switch has a control qubit that allows you to coherently control the order of two operations. So the question here really is like, why not then, if you have this control qubit, not just take the control qubit together with the message qubit A, so you have the control qubit C initialized in the plus state, the message qubit A, so corresponding to, let's say, the polarization degree of freedom, and you put them together through a CNOT gate. And now we know that the CNOT gate acted on with some state and the plus state together allows you to communicate through the control qubit via the phase kickback mechanism. Now, you might ask, so why don't we just allow this as well, in addition to any other protocols that we might consider, like the quantum switch, etc.? Well, with our resource derivative framework, the answer is simple. This kind of protocol is simply trivial in the sense of our definition of side channel generating operations, because by definition of the phase kickback, this generates a side channel. So it's not interesting from the point of view of communication. So the superposition of sort of encoding operations that happen before the communication channels really generates side channels, and therefore should not be considered within the advantages over standard quantum channel theory as meaningful placement operations. Now, a second example is the famous quantum switch itself. So we consider this as a placement supermap. So we have two unplaced quantum channels, N1 and N2, and they are placed in a superposition of the alternative orders between Alice and Bob, resulting in a new placed quantum channel S of N1 and N2 from Alice to Bob, including an order qubit which is initialized in the plus state, and Bob has access to this qubit and can measure it, for example, in the Fourier basis, which has been shown to give communication advantages. Now, we show in our paper that the quantum switch does not generate side channels because there exists some choice of unplaced quantum channels, N1 and N2, which when put into the quantum switch, generate a placed channel that has zero communication capacity. Now, the third example, which is slightly more elaborate, is the superposition placement. So this corresponds to the quantum superposition of trajectories that we saw at the beginning, where a single particle travels in a superposition of two paths through two alternative evolutions. Now, mathematically, this is a little bit more complicated to describe because mathematically, there does not exist any operation that allows you to take two ordinary quantum channels and return a new quantum channel, which is a kind of superposition or a coherent controller, which one is being used or not used. However, what we can do is that given two ordinary quantum channels acting on, say, our internal degree of freedom of some system, for example, a photon, we can always define the vacuum extension of that channel. So let's say we started with our channels N1 and N2. We can define the vacuum extensions N1 tilde and N2 tilde, which now act coherently on this single particle sector that we started with, plus also the vacuum sector. So in general, N1 tilde will act as N1 when restricted to the one particle sector, and it will act as identity on the vacuum, but it will act in some non-trivial way on superpositions of the vacuum and the one particle. So with vacuum extensions in place, we can construct the superposition placement where we take two vacuum extended channels and put them in, place them in the superposition placement between Alice and Bob, which is defined by this isomorphism U you can see here at the bottom. So if the internal degree of freedom of the particle is in state psi, and we set the path control qubit is now the path, we initialize that in the zero state, then we send the particle through the channel N1 and the vacuum through the channel N2. And if it is in the state 1, the path is in the state 1, we send the vacuum through channel N1 and the N1 tilde, and the particle through N2 tilde. And so the superposition placement in general will initialize the path in the plus state, so we have a coherent superposition of these two possible alternatives. So the superposition placement takes two vacuum extended unplaced channels and maps them to a new placed ordinary quantum channel S of N1 tilde comma N2 tilde, which is just an ordinary quantum channel between Alice and Bob with an additional control qubit, which is the path qubit initialized in the plus state, and Bob has access to measurements on this path qubit as well. And note that neither of the communicating parties has access to the vacuum. So the vacuum is only something that is used internally in the protocol, but we assume that neither party has access to this vacuum degree of freedom.
So, we have seen from the resource theoretic presentation that the switch and the superposition placements take different initial resources. So the quantum switch takes ordinary unplaced quantum channels as initial resources, and the superposition placement takes vacuum extended unplaced channels as initial resources. So this means that any comparison on the numerical values of capacities for communication advantages between the two supermaps needs to be very careful. So a direct comparison needs to be very carefully formulated because both the supermaps themselves and initial resources which they're taking are different in the first place. Now, for future work, this resource theoretic framework motivates really a comparison between protocols in the definite causal order and other protocols with definite causal order, which are both non-side channel generating operations and operations acting on the same initial resources. So in summary, in this talk, we have formulated a resource theory of communication where the resources are unplaced and placed quantum channels, and the free operations are placement supermaps from unplaced to placed quantum channels, as well as party supermaps on placed channels. We have proposed a minimal condition of no side channel generation, which is satisfied by the quantum switch placement and the superposition placement, but not the superposition of encodings. Now, we hope that our framework quantifies the differences between these novel models of communication, as well as many more future new models of communication that will be proposed, and that may be very different from these, but still benefit from the resource theoretic formulation. Okay, so there is a bit more, just a small appendix about the other works, but maybe at this point is a good place to stop again and ask, see if anyone's got any questions. Nope. If not, then I'll continue with the last part of the talk. So let's quickly recap the aims that we discussed at the very beginning. So we identified two important research questions. So the first one was, how should potential advantages of novel communication paradigms be quantified and compared? And I hope that our resource theoretic frameworks presents a good starting point to investigate and answer this question. Now, the second question, however, still remains. So what is the origin of these communication advantages? So this is really a more kind of fundamental physics question. And now, since in the time between the publication of our resource theoretic paper and today, we've written another paper on the framework of quantum circuits, which, I mean, comes from a slightly different direction, but we hope that it is able perhaps to shed some light on the second question. So I think it makes sense for me to very briefly outline the basic principles of this paper. So if you are interested, you can take a look for yourself. So a very quick taster to our recent work, Rooted Quantum Circuits, which is a collaboration with Augustin van Rietveld from my group in Oxford and Professor Jonathan Barrett in Oxford. So this is a very general framework of quantum circuits that extends the kind of the ordinary quantum circuit paradigm and has many motivations in addition to superpositions of channels and the stuff discussed in this talk. But now here I will focus mostly on this particular application. So let's go back to the circuit for the superposition of channels. So we're not going to discuss indefinite causal order for now. So this is just the superposition of two alternative trajectories. So in this case, you can see the white diagram here is the kind of interferometric picture where you pass the photon through a beam splitter and it goes through either channel A or channel B. Now, in the ordinary framework of quantum circuits, you would draw it something like the diagram I've got on the left. So just to recap, the particle psi, so psi is, let's say, the polarization of the photon, is sent via this isomorphism U between the particle picture and the mode picture, such that when the path degree of freedom is in this zero state, then the particle is sent through channel A tilde and the vacuum through B tilde, and vice versa when the path is in the one state. Now, there is a little bit of a problem here with this diagram, because the diagram really looks like we've got channel A tilde and B tilde in parallel. And that's what we usually do when we draw two boxes in parallel in a quantum circuit. But in reality, it's not the tensor product that we have here of the two channels, but the direct sum. Because what we are really doing here is that we have a channel A, which we use, or we use a channel B. It's not that we're using both of them. So it's not possible in this protocol to use both of them in the same way. We either use channel A and send the vacuum through B, or vice versa. So it's really like a direct sum of channels. And in particular, sort of mathematically, this problem is seen in the following form, namely that the isomorphism U is a unitary channel from message tensor path to the one particle sector of A direct sum vac tensor B direct sum vac, which is equivalent to A direct sum B, assuming the vacuum is one dimensional. So we have kind of a problem that is manifested both physically and mathematically, which related to the fact that quantum circuits typically can only really capture the tensor product composition, but not a kind of alternative direct sum composition. So in our paper, we propose a framework of rooted quantum circuits, which in addition to kind of describing or drawing the channels themselves, we additionally endow the circuits with a root. So each channel is endowed with a root, which tells you about the sectorial constraints of the channels. So it tells you what the channels, like what channels are connected, which sectors in one channel are connected to sectors in the next channel, or the how are the inputs of a channel connected to the outputs in terms of the sectors. So in terms of the example of superposition of channels, we can see that here we, for example, the channel A, a channel A tilde has this input system AK, which is, we call it AK, and it's really like the direct sum of A0, which represents the vacuum, and A1, which is the one particle sector. And so we know that this channel here preserves particle number, so If we send in the vacuum, we get out the vacuum. If we send in a particle, we get out the particle. So the input and the output are kind of connected by this k. So whenever k is equal to 0, the input, we get k equal to 1 on the output, and similarly for b. But a and b are also connected in the way that whenever the particle is at a, the vacuum is in b, and vice versa. So we say that we write ak and b k bar, where k bar is really sort of not k. So whenever a we have a 0, we have b 1, and vice versa. So in this diagram, the kind of diagrammatic language plus these addition of the indices tells exactly which combination of sectors is possible within the protocol. So we see here that we are constrained by the one particle sector of A tilde tends to B tilde, and we cannot have two particles, so one in each, or only the vacuum. And this is really very important to understanding the protocol fully, because I think there has been quite a lot of confusion in both this kind of scenarios and in the scenarios with indefinite causal order, where it is not really well understood how the path degree of freedom is related to the message degree of freedom, and how information is actually propagating through the channels. Is it in parallel, or is it in some strange order? So I think that this kind of hard coding of the sectorial constraints will give us a more accurate picture of what's going on, and will hopefully be able to shed light on understanding the communication advantages more thoroughly when we're able to compare it properly with circuits that really accurately describe the situation, both mathematically and physically. Now, the example above was really the simplest example where we had perfect correlation, so k and k or k and k bar, but of course we can have more general constraints. So for example, if on the A channel you can have a loss of particle, then and on the B channel still it preserves particle number, then we would just write the Kronecker delta on the B channel from BL to BN, when they have a Kronecker delta LN, which is what we call the root. So we have sort of a Boolean matrix that comes with every channel, which we call the root, and this tells you which sectors are connected to which other sectors between the inputs and outputs. And then if A allows the possibility of losing a particle, then A would have, channel A tilde would have a root of the form omega km with three ones and a single zero corresponding to the fact that you can lose a particle, you could stay the same, but you cannot gain a particle from the vacuum in this particular case. So the sort of general framework essentially consists of taking quantum channels and giving each one an additional relation or a Boolean matrix that relates its inputs to its outputs in terms of sectors, as well as the relationships between the input, multiple inputs, multiple outputs of the same channel. So we also hope that in the future, and we are working on this at the moment, that we can apply these ideas also to the study of circuits to describe indefinite causal order. So we hope that we'll find a way to succinctly describe indefinite causal order in some sort of rooted quantum circuits. And you can already see indications of this in the paper I've cited here by John Barrett and co-workers, which uses a kind of a simple version of our framework, or the kind of the original version of our framework, to draw the quantum switch in this framework. And we hope that with our extended framework that we've presented here and further extensions, we'll be able to really draw the quantum switch in a way that allows you to really understand how the different sectors are correlated in the orders and in space-time even, and maybe really be able to compare that and also the superpositional channels with more standard protocols to try and understand where the communication advantages are coming from. So with that, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Thanks a lot for this nice talk. So we've had many questions, but if there are more. So I see a ding.
Hello. Thanks for the nice talk. My question is about the second part of fundamental physics.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you've thought about the connection of your formalism to the path integral formalism, which, I think of as a, you have configurations laid out, every possible configurations for your region of operations laid out, you take a linear sum of all of these configurations. It seems this direct sum you introduce is kind of a coarse-grained version of that, where you first group some configurations together as one configuration. For example, you group those configurations corresponding to the unitary U and the other operations as in a single group, and then you now have a coarse-grained set of configurations. And in the end, you take this direct sum to do the full path integral. Is that a valid way of thinking about this setup?
I have to say, I'm not really familiar with the path integral formulation, so I'm not sure I am able to answer the question. But maybe it's something worth looking into, because, yeah, I suppose... So are you trying to say that you think the direct sum of channels is like coarse graining of doing the path integral over... Can you do a path integral over channels? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, that's the question. Is it a coarse-grained version of the fundamental path integral?
I mean, here we are just kind of working in a standard finite dimensional quantum theory picture where you have like channels acting on qubits, for example, or qunits. So I'm not sure, and then the direct sum of different channels, we haven't really, it's not really a direct sum of channels. What we call the direct sum of channels is kind of a superposition of channels. So it's kind of there's like a channel that acts on certain sectors, and then you direct sum those sectors, like of the Hilbert space, with some other sectors of the Hilbert space, and you define how the channel acts on the other ones. Now, whether how that is generalized in like infinite dimensions, I'm not sure at present. But yeah, thanks for the question. I think that's something worth looking into.
Thanks.
Rob?
I have a few questions, but let me just start with one. The result that you can get communication using indefinite causal order, even though the channels whose order you're combining are just two copies of a depolarizing channel.
Mm-hmm.
Given, if I understood correctly, in your analysis, you're going to want to replace that depolarizing channel by instead a channel which acts like identity in the vacuum space and like depolarization in the one particle sector. Do I have that right?
Are you talking about the quantum switch?
I'm not sure. So I'm thinking that this paper that Giulio was part of, enhanced communication with the assistance of indefinite causal order.
Okay.
That was a quantum switch, yes?
Yes. So for that paper, by Daniel Ebler, Sina Salik, and Giulio, that's the quantum switch itself. So there was no notion of vacuum there. So that is like really this idea of a theoretical paper about the quantum switch as a higher order map than actual ordinary channel. So it's not about the way in which the quantum switch can be simulated or experimentally done in quantum optics. It's just about like ordinary quantum channels. And the idea is that the kind of interpretation is usually either a closed time-like curves interpretation or a quantum gravity interpretation with superposition of space-time. So that really something that we don't even have a theory for. But the idea really is that each channel is used only once, but that one use of the channel somehow is able to happen at two different points it's not even clear how it will work, but it somehow happens on both branches of the superposition, but it's still only once. And so you don't need a notion of vacuum to come in alternative to the second use of the channel. So in that case, it's just you put in two completely depolarizing channels into the two slots I have kind of drawn in this cartoon, and then you get out a place channel that has non-zero non-zero classical capacity in that paper, and then you find another one with non-zero quantum capacity in another paper.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Let me ask another question about this quantum switch. Uh-huh. When you were trying to contrast the quantum switch with the example from Philip's paper on the grounds that the quantum switch isn't side channel generating. You said something very precise, like there you can find pairs of channels N1 and N2 that do not generate any side channels.
I think yes, exactly. I think this is related to Philippe's question from earlier.
Yeah, it is. So let me just finish my question, which is in your definition of whether something's side channel generating, there was a kind of for all choices of the channels that you start with. So my confusion is just how is it sufficient to say that there's some pair of channels when your definition involves a universal quantifier?
So let's say a supermap generates if there exists such that so. It generates side channels if for every choice of unplaced channels it generates, it gives you this thing with non-zero capacity. So the contrapositive is that if there exists one at least one pair of channels, which is no good, then it's not generating side channels.
Okay, so I think I didn't appreciate that the first time around, because I think if I'd appreciated that the first time around is that seems like an odd definition of side channel generating, that it should have zero capacity for everything you put in. Oh, no, wait. No, I guess that makes sense. So let's see the contrapositive. I'm confused. Sorry.
So I have to admit that this was like one of the first things I did in my PhD, and I was extremely confused too, thinking about this for several weeks with different definitions. So,
I guess to me, it seems like the natural definition would be something like something side channel generating if there exists some choice of N1, N2, N3 that allows the capacity to become non-zero, that it has to do it for all of them.
But, yeah, so I mean that's like a that is so yeah we discussed this actually in our paper in the appendices so I mean I think that's what I think there's a similar something quite similar in Philippe's paper as well, but I think what we argue in our paper, I mean it's really just about what you want at the end of the day, but like fundamentally we are kind of used to standard quantum Shannon theory. We're used to the idea that you stick stuff in between communicating parties and either they can communicate or not. But we want to ask, like, in an extended paradigm, like, why should we take a priori that anything that is non-side channel, that any map that takes zero capacity channels to non-zero capacity channels should be disallowed? So we say, like, a priori, it is not clear that a channel with an unplaced channel with zero capacity should be useless in an extended paradigm. Maybe there are ways in which a zero capacity channel can be combined in strange ways to get activation. I mean, in a similar way too, if you just think about the transition, the original transition from classical Shannon theory to quantum Shannon theory, without the second level of quantization, we already have strange results like the superactivation of quantum capacity by Smith and Yard, where you take two zero quantum capacity channels and put them in parallel, and you get some non-zero capacity channel. So we already know from quantum communication in general that you can, just a tensor product gives you capacity. So that's kind of one of the reasons why, we don't want to disallow zero capacity channels from the start, but rather we have a weaker condition that says, you know, just if something gives you communication for free, completely independently of the thing you started with, then we don't want that to be the case. Because in that case, it just means that the thing you started with is not even relevant anymore. So it's really like this, I'm just calling you through the telephone instead of, if I'm trying to call you through a telephone and then I just fly over to PI instead, and then that kind of makes the telephone a bit useless. So that's kind of the intuition.
Okay, I think I get it now. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the question. That's really important to understand this definition, because I think it is not necessarily the most obvious thing to choose at the beginning, but there are several reasons in the end that kind of lead you to choose this definition.
Yeah. Is Philip persuaded by this argument? I'm curious.
I think for sure, like I don't know. I would say I'm not persuaded that this is the, like, I don't know how to say it, correct physical notion of no side channel generation. Like you have even said this, it's maybe a weak notion of no side channel generation. And according to this weak notion, you can separate the switch from this other thing with the C knot. To me, it's not obvious that it guarantees you that the switch is not side channel generating in a more, I don't know how to say, like a physical sense. Maybe I have another question, like...
Philippe, we had another question before.
Yeah, sorry, maybe. Sorry. Yeah, okay, just, yeah.
Yeah, so please, Debbie, you can go ahead.
In fact, they are very similar to what Rob and Philip has been raising, that I want to understand why the switch itself does not act as the side channel to allow the communication. Like, how do we interpret the idea of the placement as something extraordinary in terms of being something that enable communication out of something that we think should not happen? Like I really do not see why, like, especially after the clarification of the definition with the quantifiers, then why the switch itself is not the side channel? I'm a little curious about that.
So I guess there's two parts of the question. One is the kind of same thing that Philippe was saying, like maybe depending on what definition you choose, it can be, depending on how you define side channel generating, you get a different result. So let's say if we pick the definition that we came up with, then the quantum switch is not side channel generating because there exists a certain type of channels that you put in. And in fact, the choice is that if you put an identity channel, and a completely depolarizing channel into the quantum switch, then imagine you have a superposition of orders of identity and depolarizing here and depolarizing identity here, and then identity in sequence with depolarizing channel is just depolarizing. So you have just depolarizing channel on both arms. So you just have depolarizing channel in both branches of the superposition. So that's just a depolarizing channel. And so that gives you zero capacity. So there exists, there's at least one choice of noisy device that I can give you putting in this switch, which means that you cannot communicate. And that means that in principle, this quantum switch is not just generating communication for free independently of what you started with. So it's somehow in some way using the device that you started with to communicate.
But analogously, I could have given a free side channel in the regular Shannon setup, and there exist inputs for which it would not give me an advantage. And surely we still do not allow that to be an assisting or a free resource in our theory, right? Because we think it would trivialize our theory, despite the fact that there exists an input for which it doesn't help.
But you mean like input state then?
Like I'm making an analogy that say if I have a free side channel, but there are inputs for the free side channels that will not enhance my communication.
Yes, but
we still think that side channel is not allowed.
That's input states, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, because in this case, we are like looking at the higher level of the channels. So if we look at the higher level of channels and supermaps which act on channels, mm-hmm. then the idea here is like, in analogy to the scenario you had earlier, then that supermap would generate side channels according to the definition. Because if in standard quantum channel theory, even though some choices of states that you put into your free side channel in standard quantum channel theory do not help communication, we're not talking about states. We are already at the higher level of channels. So at the channel level,
but the analogy to like inputs to supermaps are channels.
Yeah.
So that's why I think the analogy is that if you have a choice of the channels that you plug into the supermap, mm-hmm. that allows you to generate some other channels that become useful. That's become the kind of analog to the choice of the input to a regular channel that then allows you to communicate.
Well, I mean, I'm not so sure because like we still, in principle, even in this level, even though we at the level of supermaps, we still have to put in the states in the end of the day. So at the end of the day, we still have to check states. And so we're still doing the same game. Like we're still playing with states in exactly the same way. Like if you had the, if you had some kind of free side channel in standard channel theory, you would be interested first to ask, okay, are there some states I can use to send send this? Are there any states that I can use to send information through the side channel? But then still there is, like, even in standard channel theory, there is still the notion of supermap. So what is a supermap that generates the free classical side channel? That supermap is the map that just takes, throws away whatever channel you started with, or doesn't throw away anything. It just gives you a new. It's like the supermap that is like tensor product of free channel, like identity channel. So that is a supermap that generates the free classical side channel, and that would generate side channels according to our definition still, even though some states might not be allowed. And it's exactly the same here. Like in the quantum switch, the noisy channels that we either put in or we create, or whether or not even the channels that we create that are like noiseless, so always there will be states that you can put in that are not allowing you to communicate. So I don't think that it's kind of fair to generalize the idea of side channels from states to channels in this case, because still I think we're still doing communication in the same way. So we're still communicating through the channels using states. So I think we need to treat them on an equal footing. Does that make any sense?
Sorry.
Maybe I didn't answer your question. So yeah, Rob.
So this is just a comment on Debbie's question that maybe it tries to articulate in a different way what Debbie was trying to say, that I can certainly imagine situations where taking something in the spirit of your definition would get the answer wrong. Like if I have a kind of a Vernon cipher situation where, you know, Alice and Bob share some secret key. Alice is now trying to send, you know, some ciphertext. And so if she takes the key and she adds it mod to an input, which is, you know, like say a zero, and then, you know, over at Bob's end, he sums the key and the ciphertext together to get the plain text. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when Alice uses a point distribution on zero or one for her bit, there's non-zero capacity, right? But there exists a distribution Alice could use. Like if she takes her plain text in a uniform distribution of zero and one, then, you know, at the end of the day, I think my example is falling apart. let's see. I guess what I'm worried about is something. Yeah, let me try again. That I'm worried about a situation where I could sort of engineer no communication simply because I've chosen a sort of a bad distribution. One that sort of masks the communication. So I thought I could make up an example with the Vernon cipher, but
I think I can okay, give maybe. The yeah. example. If you're so, I think it's the same intuition of both of you, but really at the level of supermaps. So you can imagine that you have sender receiver, and they have kind of on the side. There's both perfect channel. And next to it, a completely depolarizing channel. And then the supermap, what it does is, depending on the output of the channel that you put in the slot, it chooses which of these two, either depolarizing or not, channel to apply to the communication qubit. And this thing, I think, does satisfy the definition of no side channel generating, even though it's kind of intuitively clear that it's just you have the choice between a perfect channel and a garbage channel, and for some inputs you can choose the garbage channel and thus satisfy the definition.
Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't completely catch the example. Probably you have to write.
Yeah, I will have to draw it, but
I mean, I think let me just say, I think so. I accept that. Yeah, I think it's important to note that that probably it's possible to construct an example. I'm pretty sure that maybe you already wrote me the email last time with that similar example, but I'm pretty sure that there exists an example where indeed it satisfies our definition, but it is still something that you don't want. But that is really the point here. It's like this side channel generating condition is a minimal condition. So it's not, we're not claiming that every supermap that satisfies it is interesting. But we're just saying that those that do not satisfy it are definitely not interesting from the resource theoretic point of view. I mean, practically it could be, but from the resource theoretic point of view, they're not interesting. And those that do satisfy it, until somebody has kind of shown you why they are not interesting, then I think there is not necessarily a clear reason to reject them. So I think in the terms of the quantum switch, I don't really see why it is like it's not there isn't so clearly like as kind of a free classical channel or something going through. Like there is nothing like that is happening. So it seems to me that it is kind of a legitimate way to enhance communication using exotic physics. But of course, I think that is not necessarily proven by this definition.
Incidentally, if you think about the channels through the Choi state, the supermap actually transformed the Choi states. Very, very similar to how a channel transform input states.
Yes.
The transformation is mathematically identical in a way. That's why I think the analogy is not as outlandish.
Yes, but it's not exactly mathematically identical, because mathematically there is still, I mean, I see your point, but still, like, mathematically the Choi state of a channel is a very particular state where, you know, like, because of the way in which a channel is defined, the input and the output, input connects to the output. So you then you draw it, you bend kind of the wire. So it has a very particular form. So, I mean, I think that, yeah, I mean, I think maybe this analogy, like, doesn't capture the fact that supermaps really act on channels, which then themselves act on states. So the question, because like with channels, with states, you can always just check what states you're doing. So with channels, you have the channels, but you still have to put in the state. So I'm not really sure.
But the Choi state actually captures everything that can happen when the channel is then applied to the state.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, but I mean, physically, I'm not sure. I don't understand why that should be. I mean, I see the point that, but physically, I don't really see the motivation for, like, saying that if just because a quantum channel which acts in a way that would be the generalization of our definition to the channel realm, generate side channels, therefore also the supermaps should kind of satisfy the same kind of thing. I'm not sure that this generalization necessarily is physically motivated in terms of like what you want to be allowed in your theory or not. But maybe, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure I completely understood your motivation, but I see the point.
Okay, this. Anybody else have more questions, comments? Okay. If not, we should thank our speaker. Rob, yes, sure.
Just wanted to give other people a chance. So I'm still stuck on with this topic that we've been discussing. So I managed to come up with an example that kind of captures my intuition at least. So imagine that you wanted a criterion. Let's say Alice and Bob are both got channels to Charlie, and you want you want some notion of, you know, how do I know that the channel from Alice to Charlie is kind of non-trivial? So that's the analog of, you know, having side channel generating? I kind of want to know, is the channel from Alice to Charlie non-trivial? So I might try a definition like, well, if everything that Bob does, you know, no matter what state Bob prepares, there's some, you know, non-zero capacity between Alice and Charlie, then clearly there's a channel between Alice and Charlie, okay? So that's the setup. That's the intuition that would suggest a definition like yours. Just ask, is it the case that for all things that Bob could do, there's non-zero capacity between Alice and Charlie? Yeah. But if it happens that what, you know, Alice and Bob both have bits, and what happens at Charlie's end is just the sum mod two of those bits, then there's one thing that Bob can do that will make the capacity zero between Alice and Charlie, which is prepare the uniform distribution, you know, because then that gets added on to Alice's bit, and it basically you get zero capacity. So that kind of suggests that it's kind of wrong to ask, you know, is it the case that, you know, for everything, you know, Bob could do, do we have non-zero capacity? Like it feels like a bad criterion for whether there's a, you know, non-trivial channel between Alice and Charlie. And so that's kind of why I'm reluctant to accept this definition, because in these other contexts, it kind of feels wrong. And I suspect that, you know, using Debbie's idea that if instead of your, you know, N1, N2 channels, you consider bipartite states, like maybe joint distributions or something, and then your supermap, the blue supermap, was an extra bipartite thing that I'm adding on. And the question was, should I consider it as sort of adding correlations between Alice and Bob, you know? And then the criterion was, well, if for, you know, whatever the correlations in N1 and N2 and so are, you know, the overall thing has has non-zero correlations, then I should say that the blue thing, you know, had no correlations. Like that would be sort of the Trejo-Jamakowski isomorphic version of your definition. And I think, again, it would sort of get the answer wrong if you know that on each end of this bipartite thing, you're doing something like taking the sums mod two and finding that sometimes you don't get to see any of the correlation. So maybe I'm missing something, but the...
Yeah, I mean, so I think like the physical motivation here is really about taking like, if, because in those examples, there is not really the notion of like, here's a bunch of channels and they are connecting the sender and receiver. And there's a little bit different, because in this example, in the kind of scenario we have here, we imagine that there is like, you know, we're in a warehouse like BT, I don't know what you have in Canada, some kind of a company that has loads of channels. And then the company can take the channels and put them in like random places. And then there is like a guy that comes to the company and says like, I have got magic powers. I can put your channels in special ways that allows you to communicate even through your rubbish bin. And then clearly like if somehow this person, this magic guy comes and gives you like a new way of using the channels. So like, depending on which channels you started with, you get like a different kind of communication. Then somehow it feels like this magic is being applied to the channels that you started with. But if the magic guy just, whatever channels you give him, he just gives you a new channel, then you didn't even need the channels in the first place. So like the company can just go bankrupt, you know, like the company has no use of the devices that they are selling. There's no point of having the warehouse with the devices, because no matter what devices you get, you're always this guy with the magic just gives you a free channel. So it's like that guy is bypassing the use of devices in the first place. And so like the strongest criterion that we want to disallow.
Okay, but suppose that instead of your definition, I'd said not for all of the red maps, but rather take maps that are causally disconnected between their inputs and outputs, you know, like trace reprepare maps. Mm-hmm. If when you throw in only those types of maps, mm-hmm. you still find non-zero capacity, then clearly the information must have gone through the spine of the blue supermap. So that would sort of capture the intuition you just described with your story, right? It'd say like, okay, I've set things up so that clearly the information can't go through these red maps. And so they have to have gone through the blue. But when you set it up instead by saying for all, you're basically, it seems to me that the problem is that some choice of those red maps could sort of spoil the ability of the blue thing to communicate. even though it has that channel in its spine, it's just that your particular choice of the red things has kind of randomized things and made it so that you don't see the communication that's actually happening through the spine. So that's why I would rather not have a for all there, but a rather, if for the cases where there is no causal connection between the inputs and the outputs of those red guys, I still get non-zero capacity, then blue has clearly added a channel.
Yes, but I think, I think that's definitely a fair point to make, but I think we wanted to be more generous with not assuming like the intuition of classical Shannon theory, because like, so the communication advantages of the quantum switch, we really want to imagine at least the possibility of exotic physics generating these advantages. So even though we know that something that is disconnected between a sender and a receiver cannot be used to communicate in kind of ordinary physics, the idea is really like, but imagine if you have some exotic physics that we have not even had a theory to describe. Like we don't want to presume the fact that these disconnected channels necessarily are the worst channels in the new theory, because maybe in this kind of theory where you have a weird space-time or a superposition of space-times, I mean, we don't know what they are because we don't have quantum gravity theory yet, but maybe those things allow you to use the order of the space-time as a mechanism to transfer information. And we see that this mechanism, let's just assume for a minute that there is such a mechanism generating the quantum switch, then we see that this mechanism is still depends on the channels that you put in. So it's not a mechanism that is there independently of what you're starting with. So that's kind of, that's why it's like a baseline. So I completely take your point that in many cases, I'm sure Philip has cooked up some examples before, like there definitely is an example of stuff that is very strange and not very nice, and you don't want that to happen because it intuitively seems like a side channel. But this is kind of just a minimal condition. They're saying if the condition is not satisfied, if something does generate side channels, then we don't want to disallow it. But the example you, Rob, you mentioned, I think it does make sense, definitely, in standard quantum channel theory. I think that because we wanted at least to sure. be more generous with...
Well, let me make a proposal that it maybe... For every application you have in mind, what you really need is a definition wherein the property of those red channels kind of changes. So for like a Shannon theory context, the definition ought to be if when those red channels always involve a causal disconnection between the inputs and the outputs, and the capacity stays greater than zero, then we say that the supermap generated a side channel. But say it's a different context, and say you're interested in whether you've generated a quantum channel. Mm-hmm. So you might use your definition where at the end you ask, is the quantum capacity greater than zero?
Yeah.
But I would say, no, instead what you should say is rather than saying for all those red channels, you can now say if for red channels that only involve classical bottlenecks between the input and the output, if you can find some set of, classical bottleneck channels such that the quantum capacity is greater than zero, well, then it had to have gone through the spine. So you eliminate the universal quantifier and you replace it with this notion of, does there exist some things that I know don't have any of the communication capacity I'm looking for? So the challenge then becomes to try to identify what the property of those red channels ought to be in a given context that you kind of want to say is the thing that you're kind of going to allow for free. Is it disconnection? Is it classical connection? What is it? So I don't know exactly what that would look like in cases where you're talking about indefinite causal order. But it just seems to me like a different way that you could have approached this problem that you articulated, that you kind of want to go beyond standard Shannon theory towards these more exotic scenarios.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a fair point. So I mean, I think this definition is going to be the weakest one you have. So it's still going to be the baseline, but I definitely take your point that indeed it is worth kind of checking maybe for more specific scenarios, we can make the definition stronger for different scenarios. And then indeed, maybe the definition actually should depend on, that's a very good idea. Thanks for that. The definition should depend on the stuff that you want to be using. But I did say that somehow, maybe I say that the point of this definition still is fundamentally to be a minimal requirement, to rule out the stuff that we don't want. So I would say that's like the main point. Now, whether this is kind of close to the stuff that we also do want is a different question. I think, indeed, maybe using Rob's idea, we can kind of think about that and see if we can get closer to the other direction. But this is definitely kind of like a lower bound that I still think should hold.
Have you checked the other extreme, the strongest possible condition? Because if you get something there, it will be truly spectacular, right?
Strongest possible condition, what do you mean?
That for all possible channels that you plug in to that supermap, that controls the placement. Or the other, I forgot the red one. you still can't get a side channel that has positive capacity out of the arrangement.
For no input. I see. Yes, I mean that, but yeah, so yeah, indeed, if you do that, then the supermap is useless because then it doesn't do anything. So
it doesn't rule out the fact that you can in principle plug something else in and it gives you more capacity. It doesn't turn zero into positive number, but it can turn a positive number to a larger number.
I see. That's a very good point. Okay, I see. Yes. Thank you for that suggestion. That's very good. So yeah, we haven't thought. I don't think we've thought about this before, but maybe that's indeed something worth looking at. So sort of. Yes. So the opposite extreme where no zero capacity channel can be activated, but maybe still. Channels can have the capacity increase. Yeah, that's interesting. That would be an interesting point to look at as well. Yeah, thanks for that suggestion.
Any more? Okay, it's been a long talk and many questions, which is good. So thank you, Clear, again. Yeah.